I'm Barbara Bray. Welcome to my Rethinking Learning podcast, where I have conversations with inspirational educators, thought leaders, and change agents. Hi, everyone. I'm so happy today. I have someone really, really special, Carrie Gallagher.
Hi, Barbara.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. This is going to be a fun conversation. I'm going to tell everyone a little bit about you. Is that okay?
Of course. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. So Carrie is the St. John's Prep Digital Learning Specialist, Connect Safely Director of Education, an EdSurge columnist, which I didn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I'm learning a lot about you. You're also an ASCD Emerging Leader.
Yeah.
Wow.
ASCD
wow.
is an awesome organization to work with.
Ah, this is so cool. We may not get into talking about all of these, but this is great. She did a TED Talk. She's a keynote speaker. And maybe a lot of you don't know this, but also an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the cool thing, Carrie, I met you when we were doing an Ignite at ISTE. I think it was in 2016, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was just, I didn't do that well, but Carrie did so well that they asked her to come back and do a presentation again before the keynote in front of, what, 6,000 people or
so
something?
So many people. I was like, what? You want me to do what?
I was so blown away at you. You were just fantastic. I'm so happy you're here. Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you. Thank you. It was that moment where we met at backstage at the Ignite. It's such an interesting, nervous backstage moment, but there's such an awesome adrenaline rush that comes with an experience like that. So it's hard not to feed off that energy. I think that's why we had such a pleasant meeting, because we were in the midst of a great adventure together.
Yeah, I think I took a selfie.
Yeah.
So I'm going to add the selfie to the blog post that goes with this.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, that's right.
If I can find it. I hope I can find it. It was so cool. So I always like to start out these podcasts learning about you and your family.
Sure. So I'm a mom of two girls. They're 9 and 6 years old, and they're awesome. I've been married for about almost 13 years. I'm also really close to my parents and my siblings and their spouses. And we all go up skiing every weekend together to the mountains in New Hampshire. So that's something that we enjoy doing together a lot. And it's just wonderful. Being a mom and an educator, I feel like I won the lottery. It's a pretty great combination of wonderful things that I get to do and people I get to be with on a daily basis. So
I see the pictures. I follow you on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I see the pictures of your daughter. Can you tell us their names?
Yeah. So my 9-year-old's name is Shannon, and she looks just like me. She has long, dark hair. She's literally a mini version of me. And in every way, practically, it's kind of frightening, actually, when you meet yourself as a child. My 6-year-old's name is Morgan, and she also looks a lot like me, but she also resembles my husband in terms of her temper and her sense of adventure. And she's kind of a little wild, and she's amazing. So, yep, she's in kindergarten, which is great. She's learning to read this year, so we're enjoying that.
Oh, it's really fun to have children, and when you're a teacher and you can actually, you know, apply some of these things. It's different. You can't really teach your kids like you do your kids in school, but it's fun to watch them grow. And I'm watching them, yours grow. Gosh, your older daughter looks so much like you. I can't believe
it.
I thought it was you.
I know. Doesn't she? I know. It is pretty
funny.
That's
amazing. Do you have a picture of you when you were younger? Did she look like you when you were younger?
Yes, definitely. I'd have to pull something up, have my mom dig something up, and then I should digitize it to do that side by side. But yeah, we look so much alike, and we have very similar personalities. And I posted a video of her explaining this like Lego thing that she made on Instagram the other day, and there were so many people who commented, "She talks and has the same expressions as you. She's like literally you, just smaller." She said, some people said she's going to be a public speaker just like her mom and all this stuff. So, so I can't tell you that. She'll get a little excited, but it was funny.
Well, the coolest thing is she made her own smartphone.
Oh, you saw it. Yeah. So it was a Lego. She's campaigning hard for an iPhone, but she's only 9, so she's got a little ways to go. Yeah.
Oh, you're going to have to watch her. She's something else.
Yeah.
You know, because you know yourself, which is really, really cool.
Yeah.
So I always ask everyone, since we're talking about your daughter, let's go back to you. What was it like when you were young and you were a learner?
Yeah. So I think, I think of learning in two different ways. When I think back of how I learned, I think of learning in the ways I learned to ski, and I was a dancer too, as a competitive dancer, and the physical and kinesthetic learning and the learning that comes with being passionate about, doing something with your friends or being on a team or being competitive. And I loved that kind of challenge of learning. And then I think about the learning that I did in school a little bit differently. Like, I was really good at playing the game of school. Give me homework, I do it, I do it well, I give it back to you, I get my grade. You know, you tell me I have a test coming, I know how to study for it, I know how to prepare for it, I take the test is over, I get my grade. And so when I think about the way I am planning learning for either teachers, because I run a lot of professional learning, or for students when I'm in classrooms working with students, I really want them to feel the way I felt about dancing and skiing and that learning. I want them to feel that way when they're in the classroom. I don't want those to feel different. I want them to feel that passion and that energy and drive to make themselves better. So I think my experience as a learner growing up, and I think a lot of us experience school the way I did, right? I mean, take tests, you know, get the test back. It has a grade. You know how you did, you move on. You know how to play the game. I don't want there to be a magic formula to doing well at school. I want school to be something that builds passion in our learners and makes them feel like they want to do better and improve themselves.
Oh, I think that's going to be a quote I'm going to use. That's wonderful, because I talk about passion, and I just have to tell you, I was a competitive dancer also.
Oh, so. What did you do?
Oh, well,
I did tap and ballet and jazz.
I did modern more.
Oh.
And I did tap, but I wasn't as good. And I even told, I don't know if you know Noah Daniels, she does a personal playlist podcast, and I told her, but I was a go-go girl when I was.
Yeah. You have to put a picture of that on this resulting
I
podcast.
I don't have one. It was a secret. I used to sneak downtown and be in a cage. Can you imagine?
Barbara.
And I loved it. Now, this is not about me, but I can make you laugh anyway.
But talk about a sense of adventure, like stepping outside of yourself and doing something that stretches you and makes you feel good and makes you feel fancy and fun. And I just think all learning should make kids feel that way. There are elements of tasks that we do that are sometimes tedious, but if the tedious tasks are helping build towards something great, they're less tedious. And so I think, I don't know, I'd like to think about learning that way.
It's probably because when you brought up dancing and skiing, I'm just wondering how you can tap into kids' own interests themselves, because then if they're passionate about something, then they're really excited and motivated to want to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is that something that you're trying to do, is trying to help the teachers help their kids do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we want teachers to, so there are sort of two types of teachers at the start of their career. There's teachers who become teachers because, at the start of their teaching career, if, you know, even if it's a second career, I think this is true, become teachers because they love the subject matter, like in love with chemistry or in love with early American history or just in love with the challenge of math. And then there are teachers who become teachers because they just want to hang out with, like, kids. You know, they love teenagers. They love spending time with teenagers, or they love spending time with, you know, kindergartners. And when you, whichever reason is the reason that you get into teaching, if you can challenge yourself to reach toward that other motivation a little bit so that you're passionate about what you're teaching and about who you're teaching equally, that's kind of where the magic sauce happens. Because if the kids know that you desperately care for them, but you also have this deep fire in your belly for what you teach, you'll hook them just because they see you being passionate. So they want to know, they want to feel that way too, right? So I think that one way to get them hooked is to show them that you care about them and you care about what they're learning and that you want them to feel as passionately as you do about what they're learning. I mean, connecting it to their everyday lives is a real easy way to do it, but just modeling that enthusiasm is a great way to start.
You said something, I just wrote it down. It's called finding the magic sauce. That is such a cool term, because the idea is, if you're passionate about something and you exude that and you talk about it and you model it, kids get excited about it, especially if you encourage them to find their magic sauce.
Yeah.
I love what you brought up. That was so cool.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Think about the things in your life that when you do them or when you're about to do them, you're super excited that you're, it's about to come, or you're super excited that this is about to happen. You want to build that kind of feeling in your learners. And you don't have to put on a dog and pony show to do it. You just have to be the real you and show how excited you really are.
So when you went in, you became a teacher. Mm-hmm. Do you want to just tell a little bit about, you know, how you started? What you know?
Sure, Barbara. So when I went to college, I really had a passion for politics. And so my major was politics, and I worked on campaigns, and I helped write, you know, campaign strategy and studied political philosophy and all of that stuff. I ended up taking on a second major in education because it's such a big issue in politics, no matter what the election cycle is. And I thought a better and deeper understanding of education policy would better prepare me for working in politics. And then when it came time for me to choose my internship at the end of during my senior year, I was like, you know what, I'll do student teaching, because I've already worked on a bunch of campaigns anyway. So doing another campaign as my internship isn't really going to help me grow. So I'll go and do student teaching. Well, guess what? About 2 weeks into my student teaching, I was like, oh, this is what I'm meant to do. I'm meant to be a teacher. Oh, who knew?
Wow.
It just became so clear that I was happy in a room full of teenagers, explaining things to them, talking with them, laughing with them, getting creative with them. And so I never really looked back. So, and the school that I did my student teaching in is the first school that hired me. They hired me right after I graduated. So it was wonderful, wonderful experience.
So what did you teach first?
I taught high school. I taught high school social studies. I taught civics, and I taught U.S. history, and I taught law and ethics my first year teaching.
Oh, wow. Almost everything that you were prepared for.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I definitely felt prepared in terms of content, but I was also 21 years old, and I was teaching rooms full of like 17 year olds. So that dynamic was a little interesting that first year, but we made it through together. So
that's amazing. It's like you're only 4 years older. It must have felt really strange.
At the time, it was just my reality. But I look back kind of in awe of myself that I made it through that first year teaching. I mean, the first year teaching for any first year teacher is over. I would go home and I would sleep for 3 hours because I was just so mentally and physically exhausted. And then I would get up and plan for the next 5 hours. And then I'd crash again at midnight and then get up and do it again. And that was like almost every week of, especially the first semester, until I got used to what it felt like to teach and maintain that energy all day. And then I think the second half of the year, I balanced it a little bit better in terms of sleep and prep time and all of that. But I just remember being exhausted, but loving it. Just, it was a blur.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you're doing something you're passionate about, it's like time just flies. You just love it.
Yeah.
And it does exhaust you because you're putting your whole soul into it, right?
That's right.
Everything's happening.
That's right.
So how long did you teach at this school?
I only taught there for a year because I got an offer from a school in Massachusetts. And I was looking, there were a couple of factors. The pay was a little bit better. The resources in the town were a little bit better. And I had some familiarity with I'd known the principal for a long time of that school. And I just kind of thought it would be a good move for me for a bunch of reasons. Also, I would be moving closer to my family. So, you know, when you're 22 and you're just starting out, it's always helpful to have that support. Found an apartment though, didn't move back home, was still on my own, found an apartment. And that went well at that district. I was in that district for 4 years. And in that district, I taught eighth grade. So I went from teaching high school to teaching eighth grade.
How was that? Because it's eighth grade is also U.S. history, right?
Yeah, it was in Massachusetts. Yeah, it was great. And our curriculum shifted a little bit while I was there. But one thing I really enjoy about teaching middle school is the team model and how much more interdisciplinary the work was. So I'm glad that I had that experience early in my career, because then I went back to teaching high school, but I had that interdisciplinary mindset. And I think the way that high school is traditionally organized, if you only ever teach high school your whole career, it's so easy to get caught up and bogged down in your subject matter and see it as its own thing, when really a more global mindset of where it fits in the big picture is the most helpful way to teach it to kids. So I didn't know that that was going to be the effect of me going and teaching middle school and then bumping back to high school, but I'm grateful for the experience. I think it helped shape the way I think about education.
Well, I worked in middle school and then also worked with high school, so I know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. It's really pretty interesting that you brought in the interdisciplinary approach for high schools, because I'm finding that more are trying to do it.
They are.
But they're still, you know, they're a chemistry teacher or they're a, you know, math teacher. They just don't see that they can work on projects together.
Right. I have to say that the teachers at my school at St. John's Prep in Danvers in Massachusetts are doing some phenomenal work. An English teacher just sent me, we went back and forth as he was planning this project, and then he rolled it out, and then he just sent me some of the final products. They read Frankenstein in his English class. As they were studying the theme of science and ethics that come from that book, like, just because you can doesn't mean you should as a scientist. And what are the implications of that? And what's your obligation as a servant leader when you think about science and ethics? And this is an English class. Right. Then he has them research some of the leading scientific developments that were sort of just on the cutting edge of, but that we have ethical questions about, things like stem cell research and stuff like that, and do these whole science research projects as a result of reading Frankenstein in English class. I'm like, brilliant example of how everything that we're teaching is tied into everything else. And you can read Frankenstein, which is, I don't even know how old that book is, and tie it very clearly to modern day debates that our students are having to think about and will be the decision makers of in a few years when they're adults, so that they're prepared for it.
That is amazing, because, I wouldn't even have thought of that about Frankenstein, but I love the idea, because stem cell research is big. Even cloning, maybe the idea, you know, even bringing that in. So I love bringing in the different disciplines and making them go deeper.
And talk about getting kids passionate about reading Frankenstein in English class. What we talked about, building that passion for learning. I mean, there was one boy who in this teacher's class who recently had a pacemaker installed. And so he did his on pacemaker technology and keeping life going using machinery and it was fascinating.
Oh, and this is eighth grade.
No, this was the high school class.
That was high school.
But that's a really great example of, it's easy for high school teachers to feel very siloed and disconnected from anything outside their subject area. But this teacher working hard to stretch himself, consult with the science department, build out a research project that makes his English literature relevant across the board. I loved it. It was great.
Oh, well, I want to know more about that. I mean, I'm going to probably...
I'll send you some of the projects afterwards. They're great.
I think we need to really include some, because I think high school teachers have a tough time.
Yeah.
They don't know, and they need some models. And so this is really great.
And I think a lot of it it's the way the system is built. They don't have the time to integrate or learn about other subject areas. They're expected to be content specialists. That's how they're trained. That's how they got their license, by taking tests in their content area that demand an expertise. And so then to say, okay, you've worked really hard toward building this expertise and getting this license in this area, but now we want you to integrate all these other things without training you. That's not fair. We need to build it into their professional learning and growth.
Well, what I love is that you're mentioning professional learning, not professional development. Mm. You're supporting them the way that, because I was a professional developer and I've changed that. I'm a coach and I support. And it really means that you're guiding and giving them ways to stretch themselves, because teachers only know what they know, or only don't know what they don't know, because they were taught in teacher ed programs that probably aren't doing what you're talking about.
Right. And I think my job as an instructional coach, my title is digital learning specialist, but essentially I'm an instructional coach that The word digital is in my title just because we want to encourage our teachers to use 21st century tools as they're adjusting their teaching models. One of my biggest jobs is just exposing our teachers to other ideas and not telling them, like, you have to implement this idea, but hey, have you heard of this? Have you seen this that this other teacher is doing? Luckily, my school supports me traveling to, you know, out of state to conferences and to other schools to see these different models in action so I can bring it back and expose our teachers to it. Then my job is to figure out which of those models is going to get picked up. Where are teachers? Oh, when teachers see it, which of the models is the one that makes teachers go, oh, like, I wonder if I could do that here. Then that's where I come in and I help them reach their own goals. I'm not the one telling them what their goals are. I'm the ones exposing them to models, letting them set their goals, and then making sure that they have the support and the resources they need to get there.
Well, that's kind of what I talk about with personalized learning. That's what we are hoping teachers will do with kids. So
yep.
Modeling this with teachers gives them an idea of maybe this is something I can do with the kids in my class. So I saw your TED Talk.
Yeah, that was great. That was fun.
Do you want to just mention what it was about and
Sure. So
how it came to be?
When I gave my TED Talk, that was a few years ago, which is amazing that it's a few years ago. And it was based on my work as a classroom teacher. I had I'm sort of considered one of the pioneers of the paperless classroom. And when I did go completely paper, it was a process. I didn't just like cut the cord 1 year all of a sudden without developing, you know, pedagogical strategies and techniques and all of that. But when I did finally go paperless, it was with high school freshmen and sophomores, some upper level, some lower level. We were not a one-to-one district. It was BYOD. So we did it with, like, I think I had 10 iPads in my classroom, but most of my classes had 26 or 27 kids. So we did it with their cell phones or whatever it is we could get our hands on. We would beg, borrow, and steal from tech all over the building. And my philosophy with the paperless classroom is that I'm not paperless because I'm anti-paper. I'm paperless because when you eliminate the paper, I found paper as very limiting. Like, it limited what you could produce. It limited how you could share. It limited how creative you could be. And if a student wanted to use paper to do something, I wasn't going to say no. It was just, now it's just one more tool in the toolbox. And I also didn't, I was sick of standing at the copy machine, Barbara. Like, sucked up too much of my life. But I found that in the paperless model, it encouraged a learning experience for my students where they were learning collaboratively, but then when it came time for them to demonstrate their learning, they were accountable as an individual. So we had a very strong classroom community. We were all responsible for lifting one another up and learning together. But then at the end of the day, you had to stand up and be able to prove your own learning with your own creation. And technology made all of that possible in a way that I'm not even sure I anticipated how awesome it would be, but it worked out great. And my students were in on it with me. You know, it was like, all right, guys, we're going to try this. I don't know if it's going to work, but let's give it a shot. And they were like, all right, Mrs. Gallagher, like, we're with you. And if it started failing a class and a half into the unit, I'd be like, guys, I don't think it's working. Like, what should we do? And they'd be like, what if we try this? And I'm like, all right, let's try that. So we were constantly iterating together. And that was what built that community of collaborative learning and sharing and, you know, responsibility.
Oh, I love it.
It was
because,
great.
Because, I mean, everywhere I go, kids have their own smartphone. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And I know schools that are banning them, and I'm going, don't you understand? They're going to use them anyway. Why don't we teach them the right way? And you did a great job of getting them to use the tools individually and also to collaborate.
So, and I also would have them, when I was able to share my teaching and learning model at local conferences, I had my students present with me because it just didn't feel right presenting it by myself since they were the ones who helped me create it and build it. Like, we really did it together. A lot of the naysayers, not naysayers, the people who were critical or skeptical about how well it would really work would ask the kids, like, be honest, how often did you get distracted? You know, were you really able to focus in her class if you had your phone out all the time? And they would ask me, did you ever tell them they had to put their phones away? And I'm like, never, because that was their tool. That was where they found their information. That was how they communicated their learning. That was their tool for communicating with me and one another and all of that. So when they asked my students, I would always just sit there and I wouldn't say anything and I wouldn't have an expression on my face or anything. I'd let them answer. And they would always answer, I didn't prompt them. I didn't script them or train them or anything. They would always just say, we didn't have time to get distracted. We were too busy working together and doing stuff and creating and figuring things out. So, you know, when they're invested in the learning process, I worked less hard. It was easier as a teacher, less physically demanding, less mentally demanding for me to teach this way than in the traditional way I taught for years, because it wasn't all about me. It was all about them and what they wanted to do, what they wanted to create.
Oh, I know. It's to me, I know that, you know that, but that first step for a teacher who's never done this, it's tough. So I get it now why you're the director of K-12 education for Connect Safely.
Yeah.
Is that why you did it? Because it just seems like it's just like a great progression, you know?
Yeah. And I think one of the reasons why some teachers have a hard time with shifting to that model is that, so I will fully admit this, I am a type A. I like control. I like to know what's going to happen. I like a plan. And if the plan goes awry, it makes me uncomfortable. But when you give something like this a shot, you start learning that that discomfort is the place where you create, or the place where you learn, or the place where you innovate the most. Because if everything is always comfortable, there's no reason to make any changes, right? So, and the reason that I got connected with Connect Safely is because I was pulled into a think tank at a certain university in the Boston area, and that I can't really name, but the CEO of Connect Safely was there too, and it was like an ed tech safety think tank kind of thing. And they brought me in because they had heard of the work I was doing with technology and, digital and paperless learning. And there were policy people, there were parent advocates, there were legal experts, and they wanted to bring in the teacher voice of, you know, what does this actually look like in the classroom? If we're going to make policy about it or write a white paper about this, we should be writing a white paper based on what's actually happening and not just what we think is happening. And so I was able to share with them some of the different things that my students were doing. And I even talked about how, even though I'm not there today, I'm tracking everything that my students are doing. And I know how much progress they've made just while I'm sitting here talking to you, because they're doing everything digitally and it's all shared with me and I can see it. And so I could message one of my kids right now who I know is off track and say, and they were blown away, amazed. Also a little scared that I knew that much information about what my students were doing from far away in terms of a privacy perspective. So that led to a really great discussion about the balance of, you know, digital creativity, tracking student learning, and student privacy. And so I've become involved in that world through Connect Safely now as a result. And I met Larry Magid, who's the CEO, and he brought me in as a director of education. So it's really awesome, powerful, meaningful work. I really love it.
Well, we didn't talk on that. Even though you're a teacher, you're a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It seems like you pull together everything, but teaching is, you're so passionate about it.
Right. Teaching is definitely my first love.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's amazing. So, I mean, I could talk to you all day long. I hear the kids in the background.
Yeah, school just got released, so they're running through the hallway.
Uh-huh. That's okay. So one of the things is that you've brought in policy, culture. You're really trying to pull it together, and being in this organization and working at your school at the mm-hmm. same time.
Yeah.
Wow, it's a perfect mix.
It really feels good. I mean, I do love my work in all the different areas. And I get asked a lot, like, how do you manage all of this? How do you balance it? And I just can't imagine giving any piece of it up, because it's all so connected. It's all, you know, understanding one part helps me understand the other part better and do the other part better. So without that balance of perspectives, I wouldn't have as much of a global view of where education is and where it's going or where it should be going.
Oh, we're so lucky that you're here. I think we need the side that understands policy and understands how to integrate the systems and the curriculum. And I mean, it's kind of a nice progression. It's going to be fun to follow you.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know where I'm going to end up, Barbara. So
we'll
see.
I don't either. And I'm really old and I'm still doing this.
But isn't life a grand adventure though, right?
Well, you're here. You might as well do what you love, right? And also, if you can contribute at the same time, how valuable and wonderful that is, because not many people can do that. So I really, really appreciate you sharing.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, thank you for being with me today. This was a wonderful conversation.
Thanks, Barbara.
Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning podcast and my conversation with Carrie Gallagher. Make sure you check out the complimentary blog post about Carrie and check out all the resources, links, and pictures that we share with you. You can subscribe to the podcast, and we'd love a review on iTunes. You can also subscribe to my website, barbarabray.net, and then you receive announcements and updates, and then you don't miss any of the conversations.